and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Today I'm in Putrajaya. I'm in the office of Dr. Nuraisha Maidin Abdul Aziz. She's the Pakatan Harapan candidate for this parliamentary constituency. She's contesting here in Putrajaya against five other candidates, including Barisan Nasional incumbent Tengku Adnan Tengku Mansor, Perikatan Nasional's Razi Jidin, who is the caretaker education minister, and Pejuang's Rosli Ramli, also two independent candidates, Lim Fisbi and Samsudin Muhammad Fauzi. Now, prior to her foray into politics, Dr. Aisha was a senior lecturer at the Parasitology Department in University of Malaya's Medical Faculty. Dr. Aisha, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Good of you to
take some time out of your busy campaigning period to talk to me. I know we're in the last stretch before polling day. I want to begin with how you became the PKR candidate for Putrajaya. So when I interviewed Rafizi, he mentioned that during the online campaign for PKR to expand its candidate pool, they ran, you were one of the 1,600
yes.
applicants
yes.
from the public who wanted to pitch to run in GE15, you were one of the few that were chosen to be fielded. I think one of seven, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
Why did you apply?
I was impressed by IU Malaysia. I thought, finally, someone's taking charge. Someone's taking responsibility. Someone's going to the ground to speak to the people of Malaysia. And I was there when IU Malaysia was first launched at Setiawangsa. I drove there, went there, and I said to my cousin, look, you know, we got to go, we got to show our support in every way that we can. And so that's how it literally began for me, that, you know, it was very clear in my heart of hearts that things are very, very bad in Malaysia in so many ways, in so many levels, that even if we are not politicians, it is incumbent upon us to do all we can to support the people who are committed to true reforms.
Well, it's one thing to support those people, but it's another thing to throw hat in the ring yourself.
Yes.
Why did you choose politics? There are many other avenues to affect social change, academia being one of them, civil society, advocacy. Why politics? People say politics is toxic.
It certainly is. But I have tried my hand and I have dedicated the past 15 years of my life to being the best academician I thought I was. I'm a well-published author in the field of neural tube defects. Not just the field of neural tube defects. I also publish quite a bit on a neglected area of parasitology, because I'm a part of parasitology. I've done it all. You can throw me anywhere. I will do the work. I will do the science, because I am, in essence, a scientist by training. And so, even though I remain true to myself, even though the work that I do in my laboratory at parasitology, of which I had three laboratories, all of which were dedicated to vertebrate development, looking at the development of the brain and the spinal cord, and also invertebrate development, looking at other things that can also help the parasitology department. Well published, which then laid birth to my advocacy work, whereby we even include, you know, over the years, I had been asked by patients, you know, and their parents to accompany them to appointments. Because in Malaysia, the communication is pretty bad in trying for the parents to understand what neural tube defects is all about. Mm. So I've done this. I have done the work of an academician. I have done the work of an advocate. And still, there are so many gaps that needs to be filled in, which I cannot do as a senior lecturer who hasn't been promoted, you know, for all her 15 years of working in the number one in the number one university in the country, and as well as I've already given all my resources in order to help my support group Malaysia Neural Tube Defects.
Okay.
It came to a point that, you know,
this is the last avenue.
It's either that I needed a political will.
Okay.
Political will was essential. It's essential in order for not only my spina bifida children to be protected by the law and receive the kind of care they should be receiving, as well as a career progression for all my postgraduate students who have graduated from my laboratory, for them to have a good career ahead of them. So I'm doing this for the future generation of Malaysia.
Right. So there are causes, that specific causes that you want to champion. And this, I assume, is at the federal level, at the national level. I want to come to that in a little bit. But
sure.
You mentioned gaps, and you said you were aware of the political system, political culture being toxic and affecting the way people view the political system. What are the gaps that you've identified, particularly in this past period of you being immersed in political culture, in campaigning? There is no other, I mean, this is a time where everything gets amped up, turned up to 11. What are the gaps you've noticed?
Well, my biggest disappointment specific to the political system of this country is that GE14, the person who worked the hardest, the person who won Pakatan Harapan, all the votes by going to every single kampung and every single area in Malaysia, urban and suburban and, you know, in the villages, was not put into government. And that made me extremely upset. So all I wanted to do, come GE15, there being IO Malaysia there, I want to make sure that Saudara Rafizi Ramli gets into government. That was my only intention. And of course, because Saudara Rafizi belongs to Parti Keadilan Rakyat, and because Parti Keadilan Rakyat in itself is the only party, in my opinion, that is dedicated to true reforms. If they weren't dedicated to true reforms, they wouldn't have voted on my application and accepted the first person ever to enter politics by merit, which means that I have to work extremely hard now to win my voters, to win the Putrajayans, to tell them that all their issues are my issues as well.
What are their issues, Dr. Aisha?
So we took a while to come up with a 5-point manifesto, but I made sure that we spoke to everyone. I wasn't just going to speak to the upper crust civil servants. I was going to speak to every level of civil servants that there are in Putrajaya. I abhor the fact that this country has been divided into this B40, M40, T20. It just doesn't make any sense. This division as well, that, you know, you have to label people as OKU in order to identify them and give them their due worth. So we focused on speaking to all the stakeholders. I had given out my number to all Putrajayans. They are free to WhatsApp me, and many have, which is great, because I get to listen to their heart of hearts telling me what their issues are. And above and beyond all else, everyone generally wants a better quality of life. And that better quality of life for Putrajayans were then summarized into 5 points. That being, number one, that civil servants are not going to be victimized. If Pakatan Harapan wins, we will look after you. You're not going to lose your job, irrespective of who you're supported.
Right.
Yeah.
I looked at the 5 points, and I have to say that number one was the one that caught my interest the most.
All right.
This memartabatkan penjawat awam. Mm. What are the issues there? Why do you feel... I know because of your background as a civil servant.
No, it's not really because of my background, honestly.
Okay, so but you seem to have a good grasp of the issues that... the undercurrents in the civil service?
Because I spoke to everyone.
Okay, well, tell me about that. Tell me about this memartabatkan penjawat awam.
People are scared. I mean, the great numbers of the population of Putrajayans are made up of civil servants. And, you know, all these civil servants have given birth to a completely new generation of young ones, right, who are now making this huge numbers for Undi 18, mm-hmm. right? So I've got to figure out whether the civil servants and the children of the civil servants want the same thing, you know? And so, I mean, yes, you're right in the sense that I am the daughter of two civil servants, two retired civil servants, and I myself am a civil servant. But I think I am very, what was that word that Rafizi used? Unique. Because I have never given a toss about what people thought of me. My aim upon returning from England, you know, of which I did a PhD in a top lab, in the number one lab for neural tube defects in the world, all right? I did that. Mm. I enjoyed it. I had a better time in London, you know, even though when it would like right. snow and it would freeze over, and with my wheelchair, I would go into one hole and to another hole all the way back to my residential college. But I felt I had a better time there. I had a, you know, scientifically robust discussion, worth my time and energy, as opposed to what students, in majority of students, undergo in Malaysia.
Dr. Aisha, yes, you started that answer with, when I asked you about civil servants, you said people are scared.
People are scared.
What are they scared of?
They're scared of being persecuted. They're scared of showing who their true selves are. And I've never had that problem, in the sense that, as I was, you know, because I had digressed, because what I was trying to say is that I made a promise to myself when I came back to Malaysia that I was going to remain true to myself and be the best teacher that I can be. And I wanted, because I studied, I'm the only person with spina bifida, with a PhD on spina bifida, only person in the world.
Okay.
And I wanted to make sure that when I come back to Malaysia, this is the subset of the population that I was going to effectively help. Yep.
I find that very interesting, and I do want to ask you what the implications are of having a civil service who is, as you claim, intimidated or oppressed or scared. What are the implications of that, and what are the, how do you see it changing? What is that vision of change for you?
That vision of change is when the people of this country, when the civil service feel that they are able to express themselves clearly, concisely, and be able to do their jobs according to their training and according to what the job requires.
You're not just referring to political affiliation, right? You're talking about a civil service that's not afraid to speak up. Speak up when they see wrongdoing, speak
Absolutely.
Up when they want to make a change, when they see ineffectiveness. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, when they see inefficiency, that they're not going to say, okay, boss. They say, look, boss, this can be overcome by A, B, C, D, E. Which is why I've decided to surround myself with young people who are intelligent, who understand the importance that our country change for the better. And I open myself to criticism. I open myself to making things better, because in order for me to make things better, I need to be with people who are not scared to tell me things.
Right. Did I hear you correctly when you said you are the only PhD candidate in the world with spina bifida? Is that right?
The only person with spina bifida with a PhD in spina bifida.
Sorry, it's not a PhD candidate, with a PhD.
Yes, I am.
So, in the news coverage of you, in the conversations about you during this campaign period, there's a lot of focus on your disability.
Okay.
How is that something that you resent, the way that the media, the public, frames you beyond, you know, beyond your accomplishments, beyond your humanity, that the focus is almost always on the disability.
Yeah, because that's how Malaysians have been trained to think. I don't blame them in the slightest. I really don't care what is in the press. What I do care is that the people around me, in close physical proximity, treat me with respect. And that includes, you know, respecting my time and respecting my boundaries. That means more to me than what is out there being printed and said about me, because it takes time in order for things to improve.
Is it difficult then, Dr. Aisha, to be held up as the as representing all of the disability community, you know, especially because the community is multifaceted. It's
absolutely,
it's full of differing lived realities. It's
absolutely
full of intersectionalities. It's
absolutely
just like how we talk about the youth vote or the
absolutely
Malay vote. It's not monolithic.
That's right.
So you're being held up to this standard where you have to represent all persons with disabilities.
Well,
is that fair?
It is okay by me.
Okay.
It is okay by me because it is a job that needs to be done. And I'm willing to do it. Which is why when IUH Malaysia started, any good work that I did with my group, Malaysia Neural Tube Defects, so I have hashtag HidupMalaysiaNTD, I would tag IUH Malaysia after that. All because I wanted the reformist government of Anwar Ibrahim and Rafizi Ramli to not forget children with spina bifida, that policies need to be put in place for children born with birth defects. So which is why, because I'm a professional, because I have a PhD in it, I have the condition, I have a lived experience in it, and also because I care for patients and bring them to appointments and help them have a better journey in the medical system of Malaysia, I made it very clear that I will only speak up about spina bifida, which is why all my posts were all spina bifida based. And this is also the reason, over the years, I have stayed clear of all the other persons with disability groups, because I do not think that they truly fight for people with disabilities, because you cannot have an upper class and a lower class of people with disabilities. You have to take account every single stakeholder.
What do you mean by that? Can you?
How do I mean by that?
What does upper class, what are the different classes?
In my mind.
Yeah, in your mind.
Well, all right. I think for the longest of time, there was this group called Jawatan Kuasa Pemandu OKU.
Okay.
And they led discussions, etc. But as a person with disability, I have never been asked to join in. I've never been a voice has never been given to me. I'm 47 years old. I have a PhD on my condition, but no one has invited me to give my thoughts.
Okay, so,
so that's what I mean. That
that's the upper class. They're not listening to all of the disability community.
No, they're not.
Who's being neglected? Apart from the children with spina bifida, your children.
My children. Everyone. Everyone's being neglected. Because none of the issues pertaining to disabilities have been solved.
Teachers.
I graduated.
Teach us what are the issues.
Hold on a sec. I graduated. I graduated in 2007. I became a senior lecturer on the 1st of September 2007. In 2008, when ACTA OKU was being passed in Parliament, I was there. And I was there when the minister gave a press conference, surrounded by all these OKU activists. All of them wanted to take a photograph with her. I didn't want to take a photograph with her. She wanted to take a photograph with me. But I did ask her a question. I asked her, who is going to enforce this ACTA? All right? Her answer was Jabatan OKU. All right? So Jabatan OKU, which is part of Jabatan Kebajikan Masyarakat, under the auspices of KPWKM have to sort out, as you mentioned just now, this multifaceted, multi-everything under this one umbrella. And they have no legal power because Akta OKU is not legally enforceable.
So if you were to win the seat and get into Dewan Rakyat, would amending, reforming, enforcing Akta OKU be your main priority?
Immediately.
How would you improve it?
First thing that I will do is that I will engage with Jabatan Kebajikan Masyarakat to improve the Kad OKU form. It is outdated, it is ridiculous, it is based on the 7 classifications of disability that makes absolutely no sense at all.
Mm.
It has to be based on data. And that data is the medical records of this country, which is left languishing in so many facilities. Our infrastructure is preposterous. We have smart, intelligent civil servants who know how to get their jobs done. They are excellent when it comes to digitalization. They know how to look at the records on the computer and they can extricate me the physical document within 20 minutes flat. I know, because I'm a real researcher. I go on the ground and get the job done. I am that powerful. I'm sorry, I really am. I do get things done without fear nor favor. It is not about the promotion in local universities. If it was about the promotion to me, I would be Tan Sri Professor or Aisha Maidin by now. But I say it as it is from day one. Because I want things for kids like me to improve. And the reason why I throw myself like this into hellfire, you know, is because I think I have a better time being born spina bifida in 75 than a spina bifida child being born now in 2022, unless the parents find me. If the parents find me, I will make sure the child is cared for.
I have to ask you this question. There are easier ways to represent the OKU community.
How? You tell me.
We have a senator who is a person with a disability herself.
Sorry. It's quite
hilarious. Why choose the difficult route? Why choose to contest?
You know, I'm going to say it very clearly. I think the senator OKU route is the jalan yang tidak bermaruah. I'm going to say it very bluntly. It's not based on merit. It is not based on equality. When I go into the parliament, you can bet your bottom dollar that all the other parliamentarians better watch their backs because I'm going to go there backed with facts.
And on that note, I want to thank you for being on my show tonight. I appreciate your time. That was my conversation with Dr. Nur Aisha Maidin Abdul Aziz. And that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching. And good night.